The views of this program are not necessarily the views of KJLL Radio, its management, or its sponsors. The host is solely responsible for its content. Enjoy.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure...
Direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
The Fred and Jeff Show.
And good afternoon, everybody. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my brother, Jeff.
Hola, Tucson, Arizona. Hope you all are having a great day.
Welcome to the big show. If we would invite you to join us at our electronic companion to the Fred and Jeff Show, which is fredandjeff.com, where you can actually listen to the show live. You can see old shows, see pictures of our guests.
Links.
Links to all the stuff we talk about.
Yeah.
And also you can, there's links to our sponsors.
Right. And did we hit 100 degrees today?
I think it was stretching, but because the clouds came in, I'm wondering if that sort of settled things down a little bit.
Wow, one more day, you know, we may make it to June without hitting 100 degrees.
It's my favorite time of year to be, you know, 100 degrees. I just love the heat in Tucson.
I know you do, Fred. I know you do.
I think my brain was cooked early on as a child. I just, you know, it reminds me of my childhood.
Yeah, well, it reminds me of your childhood, too. So we got a big show for you folks today. Lots and lots of fun stuff to talk about. But first, I want to ask you about... Oh, yeah. First, I want to say thanks to our sponsors. How could I forget our sponsors? A Little House Cleaning. All of the folks that make this show possible. We hope you support them because they're great folks.
And we know you do.
And we know you do. But they start off with Barker Morrissey Contracting, Casa de la Luz Hospice, H&S Estate Gardening, the Coleman Brothers at Mayfield's Florist, Monkey Burger, good stuff over there, and your friends at Ronstadt Insurance. So support our sponsors, please, because they make the Fred and Jeff Show possible. And Fred.
Yes?
What's this hashing thing you got yourself involved in on Saturday?
Hashing, isn't that when you make breakfast?
No, Fred, it's not. Well, you tell me. That's not the story you told me earlier.
Oh, well, I went to my first hash. I was a hash virgin. And it's a running club. And it was started by the British military back in the early 1900s.
Really?
Yeah, it was created by an officer to keep his men in shape, fit. And so what they do is they send out either one or two people they call hares. And the hares set a track or a trail, and they get about a 15-minute start, and then you can either run it or walk it, and you have to follow the trail, and they leave signs. You know, they put false
breadcrumbs and
pretty much it's like flour. They'll just drop flour,
like flour
that you bake with. Yes, and as you know, you see these flour marks, and they will set false trails. And there'll be decision points, and there'll be a false trail and a real trail, and so it's a lot of fun. They do it every Saturday and on Wednesdays.
How'd you find out about this?
Actually, through some friends. I was sitting at one of our typical watering holes. You know, we used to go to Trident all the time,
right?
And I met some people.
We still do.
Yeah, we still do. And it was a Saturday afternoon. We were watching, I don't know, football or something, and a bunch of people came in and they were talking about this and. I was interested and started talking with them, and they're called hashers, and they all have their hasher name. So when you go several times, they name you, so you have a hasher name. I'm still just Fred. That's my name. And
soon to be cooked Fred.
I don't know. No idea. But it's a good time, and there's a lot of people.
You were telling me they do this internationally?
Yeah, you can go anywhere in the world and hash. You just, wherever you're at, you look it up on the web, on the internet. And you'll find a hash group somewhere in the world.
Oh, that's very cool.
Actually, on Saturday, there were two lovely ladies from London who were hashing with us.
Who were just here they visiting?
They came into Tucson, to Arizona for vacation. And
saw it on the website and decided to join.
And they were hashing.
That's very cool.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. There was a guy from Morocco who was born in Morocco and travels and stuff. And he was hashing that day. And it was a good group. There was about... I think about 35 people who hashed Saturday afternoon.
Is that a big group for them or average or
They said they used to get about 50 or so. It just varies. Like, obviously, it was a holiday weekend, Memorial Day.
Right.
And we should mention, well, a little segue, thank you to all of our service people and to those who gave their lives for our freedom.
That's thank you, Fred.
Well,
that was very nice of you to say. Thank them. Yeah, thank you, everybody that has been in the military.
So, you know, we had fun. So this, I guess it was a relatively big group. And there's a little bit of adult libation that is consumed.
Now we get to the real story.
You know, during this thing. But, I don't drink. They typically drink beer, and I'm not a big fan of beer. I am a big fan of tequila.
Right.
So I brought some tequila, and I was when they were drinking their beer, I was drinking my tequila.
That's
so.
Why you were just Fred.
Federico.
All right. Well,
it was a lot of fun, and they do it every Saturday. There's hashes on Wednesdays, and they have special hashes.
Special hashes.
Yeah. So you know, it's like big event hashes.
So we're gonna have to get the link.
We'll get the link up eventually. What I want to do is have the hashers here and talk about it, and then we'll put the link up.
Cool. Very cool.
But if you just look up, you know, hashing Tucson, you'll find the website.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're gonna take a quick break.
Well, we do have one little bit. Our buddy Tom Philbaum.
Yes, yes.
He's got an exhibit going on at Tucson Museum of Art, and we talked about it before, I think. But
I don't think we have
the Precurious Rocks.
Oh yes, we did. Yes,
we did. And that's still going on at Tucson Museum of Art, and you know, invite people. You know, the TMA is a friend of the show, and we wanted to direct people down there, especially since local artist Tom Philbaum has some really nice pieces out there.
You know, what's funny is we've been doing this show for over a year now, and we can go back and talk about. Lots and lots of folks that have been on the show and what they've been up to since they've been on the show. Another one before we take a break is the Sportsman's Fund.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Send a Kid to Camp.
That starts this in weeks.
Well, the kids will start going to camps now.
Right.
But the Sportsman's Fund's still looking to raise a little bit of money. So azsendakidtocamp.org. Yeah,
but break it down a little bit. If somebody wanted to send one kid to camp for a week, what does that cost?
Well, they send kids to different camps. There's the Triangle Y MCA Ranch Camp up in Oracle.
That's the one we used to go to all the time.
You and I used to. We kind of grew up there in the Indian Guides.
Right, and at summer camp.
And summer camp, that's right. And then there's the Boy Scout Camp, the Girl Scout Camp, and Carondelet supports a burn camp up in Prescott. It's called Camp Courage. And so all the Sportsman's Fund... they send kids to all of those camps. So if you want to send one kid to the Y camp, you can do that. If you want to help support some Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts to go to their camps or a child to go to the burn camp, Camp Courage, absolutely you can do that. The Sportsman's Fund is one of the few organizations where almost 98 cents on the dollar goes to support the kids. It is a great organization. It's over 60 years old. So again, azsendakidtocamp.org. Support the Sportsman's Fund and the Tucson Museum of Art. And we'll be back in a minute with our first guest. And we'll see you in a minute and a half.
I'm John Fina from Performance Footwear, and a lot of people think that after I finished playing pro football, my health insurance would not be an issue. Not true. So when I needed a great health plan for me and my family, I called the folks at Ronstadt Insurance. They hooked us up with the perfect policy from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona, and we couldn't be happier. So if you're shopping for health insurance, give my friends at Ronstadt Insurance a call at 721-4848. They'll be happy to help you. Oh, and when my mom and dad turned 65, my friend Jim at Ronstadt Insurance helped them find the right Medicare plan. Call the pioneers in good service at Ronstadt Insurance, and they'll help you buy the right policy the first time.
Ronstadt Insurance is a full-service insurance agency. Give us a call at 721-4848 or look us up online at ronstadtinsurance.com. Ronstadt Insurance is an agent authorized to sell health insurance plans from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
At Barker Morrissey Contracting, our goal is to develop lasting relationships with each one of our clients. We measure our success on achieving that in the end. We offer the best possible combination of experience, integrity, and commitment available in Arizona. The foundation of our organization is a commitment to meet our clients' needs from pre-construction services through project build and move-in. We have experienced, cohesive project managers who thoroughly analyze each project prior to construction. We do this to provide value engineering at the front end of the project while reducing time-consuming change orders during construction. We are confident that our collaboration with you will result in a successful project that'll exceed your expectations. Barker Morrissey Contracting. Straightforward, honest, and reliable. Call us at 323-3831 to set up an appointment. That's 323-3831.
Casa de la Luz is Spanish for House of Light. That's what one needs when facing a terminal illness. A House of Light to provide comfort, support, and experienced hospice care during the end-of-life journey. The mission of Casa de la Luz is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Founded in 1998 by Lynette Jaramillo and Agnes Poor, Casa de la Luz Hospice has become a leading provider of superior hospice care throughout southern Arizona. Whether it is in the hospital, at home, an assisted center, or nursing home, the caring staff at Casa de la Luz will reach far beyond the usual and customary hospice service. Every service provided is a reflection of our commitment to our community. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Visit the Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
And welcome back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. You know, we...
Where were you there?
I was,
you were reading
I was
something?
Reading. But, you know, it's funny because we have a new producer.
Christopher.
Who we love and does a great job for us. But I'm used to, whenever we come in and go out, we
bumper
always have
music.
We have music.
Yeah, bumper music.
So I wait for the music. But we're training him. We're training
that was
him.
A nice way of saying, Chris, play the darn bumper music. He's notes.
No, I was just expecting it. I didn't figure out about, you know, another.
Usually when he points at you, that's a good sign,
yeah,
too.
But when I'm reading, I can't see him point.
That's the key. That's the key.
So this is the Fred and Jeff Show. Visit us on our electronic companion, which is fredandjeff.com. And this is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my brother, Jeff. And joining us in the studio is Jonathan Mabry from the city of Tucson. And, you know, we stay away from politics. We stay away from negativity. But there's a lot of stuff that people read in the newspaper about what's going on and what's not going on with Rio Nuevo. And I thought it would be a great idea to bring Jonathan into the studio to talk about some of the great stuff that's going on with Rio Nuevo. You know, regardless of what the paper tells you, you're going to hear the truth from the Fred and Jeff Show.
Oh, very nice.
So
Fred.
With us is Jonathan Mabry. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Thank you.
And Jonathan, your title is Historic Preservation Officer, Housing and Community Development. What does that mean? What are you in charge of?
Well, the city has a lot of historic districts, a lot of buildings that are designated historic, and also I function as the city archaeologist, and there are archaeological sites everywhere in Tucson.
Really?
And I make sure that before the city builds a new street, puts in a new water pipeline, that an archaeological site is not going to be destroyed in the process.
And these are sites that nobody knew about before. So, hey, we're digging around. We think we're going to put a new road in here. The next thing you know, you find something.
Well, there are more than 500 known archaeological sites within the city limits.
No kidding. Give us an idea of a couple of them.
Well, I'm not going to give precise information about location.
You don't have to tell us where they are, but like what?
Well, we have a number of large prehistoric Hohokam village sites in the city. There are, downtown, there are a lot of historic house foundations, building foundations, old privy pits.
What's a privy pit?
An outhouse.
Okay.
Pit. You probably had one of those growing up, right?
I don't know if I did, but maybe.
So there's a lot more preserved beneath the streets and in the vacant lots of Tucson than most people realize.
Yeah. So you're the guy in charge of cataloging those and making sure that...
Well, I make sure that before a city public works project goes forward that the area has been looked at by archaeologists, and if there are archaeological sites that are going to be impacted, that the city hires an archaeology company to come and excavate there to recover enough information there that it's not completely lost.
Cool. And generally what they do is they'll come in and do the excavation, they'll document everything, and then they just recover it.
Well, usually what happens is after the archaeologists are done, then the project goes forward. So the archaeological site is not completely preserved. That's why we hire the archaeologists to come in and do some digging, because we know it's going to be impacted by the project and lost.
Wow, okay. So that's a tough job.
There's a lot to it.
Yeah, that is a tough job.
So how did you get involved in this?
In this?
Well, in the city with, you know, your career path.
Well, I'm an archaeologist for more than 30 years.
You're a PhD.
From the University of Arizona.
Nice.
Fair done.
All right, very good.
So I've worked in academia, I've worked in the private sector, and now I'm in the government sector.
All right. And can you share with us, there's got to be one project you've worked on during your tenure with the city that was just far and away above the most amazing thing you've ever worked on. Anything you would like to share with us along those lines?
Well, I think that the archaeological investigations that were done for the west side of the Rio Nuevo district were really interesting and yielded very significant results. I was actually, before I worked at the city, I was one of the archaeologists that did some of that work. And we found evidence of continuous occupation going back more than 4,000 years at the base of A Mountain.
Wow.
At Tucson's birthplace.
That's amazing.
And then I moved to the city and was on the other side of the table and was managing additional archaeological work that was done at the base of A Mountain to clear that area for construction of the recreation of the Spanish colonial period mission that was there. So that was part of the original concept for Rio Nuevo. It was on the 1999 voters ballot that was approved by the voters, that the Rio Nuevo district would recreate the Spanish colonial period mission and mission garden at the base of A Mountain.
And so tell me, what kind of things were you finding at the base of A Mountain? You were finding foundations of buildings, and did you find human remains, any of that kind of stuff?
Well, that's the former floodplain of the Santa Cruz River. Okay. And in floodplains, archaeologists like digging in floodplains because things get buried rapidly and
Absolutely.
Are preserved.
Sure.
So in those layers of the floodplain, digging from top to deeper, in the uppermost layers, we found the stone foundations of structures that were part of the San Augustine mission that was completed around 1800.
How far down was that?
It was just a foot or two below the current surface, those foundations. But we also found lots of pieces of pottery, animal bones, you know, the kinds of animals that they were eating. We found charred plant remains. So we got a good glimpse of what people were eating and what were the tools they were using and what their everyday life was like during the time of the mission that was on the west side of the Santa Cruz River, and the Presidio was on the east side. So we had, through these archaeological investigations, we had an opportunity to do this digging and document the actual physical remains of the Spanish period mission and the remains left behind by the Native Americans that lived there at the mission that had converted to Christianity. And then we dug deeper and we found the remains of the houses and fire pits and other things, other artifacts left by the Native Americans that were living there before the mission.
How far back did that go?
Went back more than 4,000 years in that same spot.
And how much deeper was that? So you went a foot down to find the mission remains. Mm-hmm. How much further down did you have to go to find those?
Well, the remains that were more than 4,000 years old based on radiocarbon dating were probably about 10 feet deep.
Wow. That's great. And so you cataloged it all.
Mm-hmm.
Is that someplace where your typical person could go online and see what you found?
Yes, the report for all of that work was published online. And it is available for anybody who gets on the internet to look at. It is on the website of the Center for Desert Archaeology.
Oh, what's the Center for Desert Archaeology?
It is a nonprofit organization that distributes information, educates the public about historic preservation and our archaeological heritage, and also preserves archaeological sites.
Well, that's great. We'd love to put a link on our show tomorrow. You know, we will put a copy of the show online for people to hear, you know, if they missed it today. We'd love to put a link to that online tomorrow so folks can take a look at that.
Yeah, we'll do that.
We can do that.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I found really interesting is that and we're going, you know, skirting the
we're not into the meat of the issue yet, right?
Yeah, no, but we're sort of skirting the Renuevo stuff, and this is something that's really important to me because, you know, when I was on the council, we got this stuff going. Michael Crawford, who a lot of people probably heard over time, a former council member, used to say that we spent a lot of time setting the table so that things could start happening in the downtown, and one of the things that had to happen was the archaeological work. And we saw a lot of stuff come through, not only on the west side of I-10, but we found some, you know, more contemporary things on the east side where they actually put, and Jonathan, you can help me with this, the recreation of the Presidio Wall near church, near the Transamerican building.
Right.
They actually did some digging over there and found a time capsule from a community leader from
the
1950s.
No kidding.
Yeah, he was in a jar, and we were trying to pull everything out. We couldn't do it.
That was a time capsule, a jar?
It was a mayonnaise jar.
It was a large pickle jar.
Oh, pickle
no
jar.
No way. But tell us about that.
Well, in the 1950s, one of the most prominent archaeologists in the southwestern United States, Dr. Emil Howery, conducted some excavations there where there was a parking lot just north of the Transamerica building is today. And in those excavations found a portion of the Spanish period Presidio Wall. The Presidio was the fort that protected Tucson.
And that was established in 1776. By Hugo O'Connor.
Yes.
Or Hugo O'Connor for the Anglos.
You love saying that, don't you?
He does. So Dr. Howery found not only a portion of the adobe foundations of the wall of the Presidio, but beneath that he found a 1,000-year-old prehistoric Hohokam pit house. So it was quite a...
it was a little twofer for him.
Well, it just shows the layers of history in downtown Tucson. So in 2001, I believe it was, archaeologists were hired by the city to excavate in that very same parking lot and found more of the adobe wall foundation of the northwest corner of the Presidio. Northeast corner.
We went a little bit long. We got a hard break, but we're going to finish the story when we come back.
Yeah, we'll be right back after the news, so stick around.
Bye.
Out gazing at stars, hearing guitar.
CNN Radio, I'm Stan Case. House Republicans drove home their point about the debt ceiling Tuesday. By a 318-97 margin, lawmakers voted down a proposal to raise the nation's debt limit by about $2.4 trillion. The message to congressional Democrats and the White House is that the government's borrowing authority won't be increased without spending cuts. Jurors in the Casey Anthony murder trial heard a 911 call today in which the defendant first talked to authorities about her missing daughter, Kaylee.
My daughter's been missing for the last 31 days.
And you know who has her?
I know who has her. I've tried to contact her.
Casey Anthony's accused of murdering her 2-year-old daughter, Kaylee. The World Health Organization has labeled cell phone use a carcinogenic hazard. The group says the problem is microwave radiation that could potentially cause cancer. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Are you being audited? Have you not filed tax returns for years? Is the IRS coming to your home or place of business? The IRS will relentlessly pursue you for unpaid taxes. I'm Patrick Cox, founder of Taxmasters. Whatever your tax-related problem, the former IRS agents and tax professionals at Taxmasters can help. Some might want you to believe that there's a new, friendlier IRS. This is not the case. You need Taxmasters on your side. Taxmasters will get between you and the IRS. We'll make sure they treat you fairly and treat you with respect. Listen, don't take on the IRS by yourself. Our former IRS agents and tax professionals have helped many good people just like you. Don't wait weeks for an appointment. Call Taxmasters right now to get started. Call 1-800-307-4310. That's 1-800-307-4310. Or go to TXMSTR.com. Again, that's TXMSTR.com. Taxmasters will solve your tax problems.
Charlie's Comic Books, Tucson's Mightiest, is at a new location, the southwest corner of Speedway and Craycroft. Open 7 days a week, Charlie's is a full-service comic shop. New comics, back issues, all your collecting supplies, action figures, t-shirts, and more. No subscription too small. Shipping available. Call 320-0279. That's 320-0279. Or click on charliescomics.com. Charlie's Comic Books, Tucson's Mightiest.
Do you suffer from irrigation leaks, a broken sprinkler, leaky valves, or you just can't find the problem? At H&S Garden, we provide high-quality, reliable service at reasonable prices. Our repair technician has over 25 years of experience. And if you hate pulling weeds, raking mesquite beans, or trimming those thorny bushes, just leave the dirty work to us. We're licensed contractors with 30 years of experience in landscape management. Our crews are professional and take pride in their work. We'll meet you on site to establish a program that works for you. Call today at 293-6488 or visit us at hsgarden.com. H&S Garden, a family-owned and operated Tucson small business.
This is Lamont Hundley from Arizona Health with your Fred and Jeff Show fitness tips. When it comes to your personal exercise routine, balance should be the most important ingredient. It's easy to lose track of time during a workout. Often we end up doing more strength training, then your cardio gets shortened and there's no time to stretch. Balance is always the key to fitness success. You need an accurate portion of cardiovascular and respiratory improvement exercises, strength training, and always stretch before or after the workout. Just as a balanced diet is important in your nutrition, a balanced workout would help you achieve greater results. For more information, please contact Arizona Health at arizonahealth.com. This has been Lamont Huntley with your Fred and Jeff Fitness Tips.
May I light that cigar for you, sir?
Thank you.
And welcome back. This is Friend Jeff Show, and we went a little bit long in the last segment.
Darn it.
With a good story, and we're going to continue that story, but right now, another good story is going to be created with the Cigar of the Week.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, guys.
How are you doing?
Try to create segues whenever I can.
Very nice.
I have to come up with a good story now?
Spin us a story, Michael.
Oh, well, I have a story about a great cigar.
Yeah.
Called the Jose Ciegas, made by Altadis.
And?
No reaction from the crowd?
No, that's a good cigar. You know, it's lower on my list of faves, but that's a darn good cigar.
It is a good cigar. It's a little medium plus body. It's got an Ecuadorian Sumatra wrapper, a little Connecticut broadleaf binder, and the filler, which is interesting in this cigar, is Dominican, Nicaraguan, and a little bit of Peruvian thrown in there for a little bit of boost.
Wow, that sounds kind of spicy.
It's a very complex cigar. A lot of nice flavors dancing around in that cigar.
Very cool.
Very cool.
And you have no stories? Like, you know, somebody came into the store?
So this one day I was sitting at the tinderbox,
smoking
a cigar from Altadis.
And a guy came in wanting a Jose Ciegas cigar.
And you said, guess what? You can get buy three, get one free.
That's what I told him.
But you had to remind him where he was.
Yeah, where was he?
What's that?
Where was he?
He was in the lounge.
At
at the Tinderbox.
And,
and at 50, we're at 5350 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 124.
It's like trying to herd cats over here today, Mike.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. Actually, the guy asked for our phone number, so I told him that our phone number was 747-4807.
Very nice. Very nice. All right, Big Mike, thanks a ton. And we'll see
thanks,
you.
Gentlemen.
We'll see you at the Tinderbox this week.
Cool.
What's a monkey burger?
A simple, well-made burger cooked to your choice.
Why Monkey Burger?
We called it that because come see our art on the walls. It tells a story. Monkey Burger, where it's impossible to be a food snob, even if they do serve wine, beer, as well as Tucson's best burger. 514-9797.
Just drive right past Olive Garden on Broadway and Craycroft and park in front of Monkey Burger.
Thank you for calling Huge Conglomerate Insurance. Your call is somewhat important to us. Please hold, and we'll be with you as soon as we can.
When you get sick or injured, the first call you make is to your neighborhood doctor. Shouldn't the next call you make be to your local insurance representative? Skip the hours waiting on hold to ask a simple question about what your insurance policy will cover.
Your current wait time is 45 minutes.
Instead, call Ronstadt Insurance at 721-4848 and get the attention that you deserve. Trust local, trust Ronstadt Insurance. Pioneers in good service.
And welcome back. And I got to say that with my bumper music. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. And also, that was Lost in Holland, too, the bumper music. And I'm here. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my brother, Jeff.
Good Lord.
And we're going to continue a story with Jonathan Marbury from the city of Tucson. And so you were talking about when they went and were working on the northeast corner of the Presidio Wall over near the Transamerican building. And if...
Go ahead.
Yeah, the archaeologists uncovered the corner of the Presidio, and what I mean is the adobe wall foundations, and there were visible the foundations of a corner tower that had a cannon during the time of the fort was being used. And the reconstruction that you can see there today at the corner of Church Avenue and Washington Street and is open Wednesdays through Saturdays for free. The reconstruction that you see there is as authentic as possible, and it's based on what the archaeologists found.
Wow. Now, how do you know there was a cannon up there?
Well, there's historical documents that
support
mention that there were cannons in the towers.
That's very cool.
Yeah, I mean, these items aren't just imagined by somebody and built.
I would imagine stuff like that. Buffalo my way through some sort of report. And we found a cannon, and then we found this pistol at the bottom of a privet, and the blah, blah, blah.
Well, no, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, you go back and look at all the documents when the Presidio was built, newspaper accounts however communications were done, letters.
So you just piece it all together.
Yes. In fact, there's an interesting story about how the Presidio was built. It was authorized, and the site was selected in 1776, but building the walls was going very slowly until there was a large-scale attack by the Apaches. And the Presidio commander at the time... decided that they needed to quickly finish the walls. The previous commander of the Presidio had pocketed the money that was supposed to go towards the construction.
Uh-huh.
So a little embezzlement going on. So, but the new commander at the time of the Apache attack that scared him to heck. Well, he decided that he would just front the money out of his own pocket to finish the walls. And so the walls were built very quickly after that.
Oh, that's funny. That's very funny.
Now, wow. Now we always talk about the Presidio was established in 1776 when Hugo O'Connor came and did that. How many commanders did the Presidio go through before it was completed?
There were several. I can't remember exactly how many there were, but it took more than a decade to complete.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we sit here today, you know, in 2011, and we look at something like the San Javier Del Bac mission, and, you know, we were talking to Bunny last week. You know, when people think of the mission, they think of, you
and
know,
Bunny is Dr. Fontana.
Dr. Fontana.
Right.
You think of the mission, but when it was first, when Father Kino came here, it was not more than an adobe shack.
Right.
You think of the Presidio, and we always talk about the Presidio and the walls and all these great things, but when it was first established, it wasn't anything but, you know, probably some shacks and you know, places to tie up horses.
Hmm.
Not much more than that.
Well, there were Native American villages here, which is why the mission was built at Bach, and why the San Augustine mission was built at the base of A Mountain, because that was the location of an active autumn village.
Right, that's where they wanted to convert the local people to Christianity.
Yeah, that village is where Tucson gets its name. The name of that autumn village was Chukchon, which means base of the Black Hill, and the Spanish took up that name, and Chukchon became Tucson, from where we get Tucson today.
Oh, that great story. Yeah. All right, nice little piece of history.
Yeah, you know, we never, I mean, we think about the European colonization. We don't think about the natives, indigenous people here either. I mean, it's a long, long, long deal.
Well, yeah, there have been people living here for thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
Well, the archaeological investigations at the base of A Mountain that were done for Rio Nuevo documented continuous occupation going back more than 4,000 years, which establishes Tucson as perhaps the longest continuously inhabited place in the United States.
There you go.
Now, I've always heard...
Fred, that's a big thing.
It is a big thing.
I like that.
Yeah, but we also... I've heard some archaeologists argue that maybe there's some maybe 10,000 years, maybe not continuous.
No, we're talking about people living in a settlement year round.
So
that started more than 4,000 years ago, based on what the archaeologists have found. Now the 10,000 year figure that you've heard, there's artifacts that show people have been traversing this valley as far back as 10,000 years ago. They were hunting mammoths and a large extinct Ice Age mammals like that. But they weren't villagers. They weren't farmers.
They're just nomads.
They were nomads.
Have they
correct.
Found any of those remains of those mammoths in anywhere close to?
In the San Pedro Valley, there have been several very important discoveries of mammoths with stone spear points sticking in them.
Wow.
And actually, if I remember correctly, the State Museum on U of A campus has some of those.
Has a terrific display currently that visitors can go see at the Arizona State Museum on campus.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Well, you know, time's wasting, and there's something that we really want to talk about, and that is, you know, we've talked about the mission at the base of A Mountain, or Sentinel Peak, and there was a garden there. And one of the things that the voters did approve in 1999 was the recreation of both the mission and the garden. And I know that one person... Rahina Romero has been very passionate about getting this thing done. And let's talk about just the garden for a little bit, the history of the garden, and then I want to talk about where we're at and also the exciting stuff that's happening with the centennial and that and moving forward.
Sure. The mission garden that listeners may have heard about was built as part of the San Augustine mission at the base of A Mountain that was completed around 1800, the year 1800. And the garden was a walled garden covering about 4 acres. So it had an adobe wall protecting it. And that wall was used to keep livestock out of the garden when it was peacetime. And when the Apaches were attacking, that wall was used to protect the people and the livestock. All the animals were brought inside. And A Mountain, its historical name is Sentinel Peak. And it gets that name because a lookout, was always posted up on top to be on the lookout for Apaches. And when they saw some approaching, they would signal and warn the people down below, and they would gather their animals and get undercover and be ready for it.
And you said it's a four acre garden?
Historically, it was a 4-acre walled garden, and it included fruit trees and gardens for vegetables, but it also included fields for wheat and other field crops.
So they could exist in that garden if they needed to for a while.
Well, they would have to store their harvest and protect that and keep it safe. But that's where a lot of their food was produced.
Okay. All right. And Fred, you were saying earlier that some of those citrus trees...
Well, let's we're going to get there.
Okay. Sorry. I'm jumping ahead.
So though it was an important piece of the people who are living here, that garden was incredibly important.
It's an important part of Tucson's story. And it's also very fortunate that 4-acre area at the base of A Mountain, where the Mission Garden was historically, was never developed. It was never built upon, and the landfill that was in use starting in the 1950s kind of wrapped around it, but it didn't. The landfill didn't extend onto the area where the Mission Garden was historically.
Now, was that by design?
Well, it's probably because the owners of the property did not sell it to the city, or the city probably would have put landfill there, too.
Right. Okay.
Back in the 1950s, I guess the city thought it was a great idea to put a landfill in our floodplain.
Nice work.
Right near downtown.
Beautiful.
Never going to need that land again.
Well, yeah, it's funny because when people, you know, we were talking about maybe doing some recharge projects in Santa Cruz, and because of our forefathers, we couldn't do it because of the landfill issues. Mm. And they also had to be remediated as part of setting the table for the future development of Rio Nuevo.
Well, there's an interesting story about the landfill and Rio Nuevo. As part of the site preparation to recreate the Spanish period mission, new technology was used to accelerate the decomposition of the materials in the landfill. So they injected air and water into the landfill and carefully monitored it, and they greatly accelerated the decomposition of the landfill. And over months, you could literally see the top of the landfill falling as the landfill materials were decomposing rapidly.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, so that's very cutting-edge technology.
Yeah, it was something that had been used for a long while, I believe, in Europe. But
it's new over here.
It worked. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, and it was pretty costly
now,
as well.
Is this garden close to the quarry where they took all the rock out of A Mountain?
It's quite close to there. It is located right at the corner of Mission Road and Mission Lane at the base of A Mountain.
Okay. All right.
Now, that property is now, I mean, Rio Nuevo owns it, and we're ready to move forward.
Actually, that property was acquired by Pima County with bond money to be used for open space preservation, and it was one of the first parcels that they acquired with that voter-approved bond program for the purpose of preservation. So Pima County owns most of the area where the garden was historically. The city owns the other piece. And the city had an agreement with the county to use this property to recreate the Mission Garden.
Perfect. Now, you know, it's going to cost a lot of money to get this thing built. And one of the things we talked about earlier today was something I think is really exciting. It's a little bit of money jumpstart on the project. And not only does it help the garden, but it celebrates our state centennial.
Yes, we were set scrambling for other funding when the Rio Nuevo board, actually I believe it was the state legislature, told the Rio Nuevo board that they didn't want any new projects if they weren't revenue producing in 2009.
Right.
And so now we're facing the challenge of where do we find the money to finish the Mission Garden as the first piece of Tucson Origins Heritage Park.
And how much money are we talking about?
Well, the original design, the master plan for the Mission Garden, I believe it would take another $1 million to finish it the way it was originally designed. Now, there's ways to cut costs and complete this garden in an incremental way, piece by piece. So we applied for a couple of grants last year, and we obtained a grant from the Arizona State Forestry Division, and this is U.S. Department of Agriculture money passing through the State Forestry Division. They were looking for projects to celebrate Arizona's upcoming centennial celebration. And we applied and said, we will plant 100 Kino Heritage fruit trees in honor of Arizona's centennial.
Kino Heritage fruit trees? Okay, what is a Kino Heritage fruit tree?
That's the question you want to get to.
Okay, yes.
This is a program run by the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. And as many projects like this have started, this one started over conversation and margaritas.
Kind of like Fred's hashing expedition over the weekend, right?
And the project is to track down the oldest living fruit trees in southern Arizona and northern Sonora and take cuttings from them and grow them out and ensure that these rare heirloom varieties of fruit trees will survive and actually proliferate, because the way that fruit trees are propagated with cuttings means that each generation is a genetic clone of its previous generation. So we believe that these oldest living fruit trees in this border region are direct genetic descendants of the first fruit trees introduced by Father Kino and the other early missionaries and Spanish colonists.
And what kind of fruit are we talking about here?
We're talking about figs, pomegranates, peaches, apricots.
Any citrus?
Quinces. Yes, citrus for sure. There's a historian who's researched this topic and has tracked down mentions in historical documents of how far back some of these fruit trees go in this region. And the earliest citation in a historical document for Arizona or northern Sonora, and by the mid-1600s, growing in southern Arizona and northern Sonora, there were plums, lemons, limes, sweet oranges, sour oranges, a strange citrus fruit called a citron.
A citron.
And also apple, date palms, figs, olives, pears, pomegranates, quince, which in Tucson we probably know better by the Spanish name membrillo.
Okay.
And also grapes for wine, because, you know, the missionaries needed to have wine for their ceremonies.
The sacrificial wine.
Right. Exactly. So Father Kino introduced a lot of these.
He is credited with introducing all of that?
A lot of them.
Okay.
A lot of them.
But all of those types of plants were here and could have been in those gardens.
Yes. And yes. And so the orchard that is planned for the Mission Garden, a recreation of the Spanish period orchard that was there, will include all of those types of fruit trees I just mentioned.
Oh, that's great.
And we are hot on the trail of tracking down the oldest living examples of those trees. And so this project, this orchard that's going to be planted at the Mission Garden, is more than just a recreation for people to enjoy, to see what a Spanish period orchard was like. It's also a salvage botany project,
cool,
to make sure that these very rare heirloom varieties of fruit trees survive into future generations.
So not only can you see it, you can taste it.
You can taste history.
That's great. Now, where are you finding all of these trees?
Well, Some of them are in the backyards of Tucson's barrios. Some of them are located in abandoned mining camps, ghost towns in the Santa Rita Mountains, on old ranches in southeastern Arizona. They're every place that early settlers homesteaded because they wanted to have their fruit trees, and so they brought them.
Oh, that's great.
Now, is anybody out there cataloging this, or are you guys, this is like groundworking, or you guys are doing the cataloging right now?
The Arizona Sonora Desert Museum is leading this project, but...
So George Montgomery's is right ahead.
Actually, Jesus Garcia.
Okay.
At the Desert Museum. And we're also partnering with the Desert Survivors Nursery, where these cuttings are being grown out.
Now, Desert Survivors Nursery, what do they do?
That's a nonprofit organization that runs a native plant nursery operation, but also gives training and work opportunities for the developmentally disabled.
Oh, that's a great outfit. I like that. All right. Listen, we got 2.5 minutes left, 3 minutes left. Is there anything that we haven't asked you or anything that you'd like to talk about with the limited time we have left? Please do.
People that want to learn more about the plans for the Mission Garden and how they can become involved should visit the website of a new nonprofit organization, the Friends of Tucson's Birthplace. And this group is taking a real leadership role in the fundraising that's needed to make this happen. And you can visit their website at tucsonsbirthplace.org.
All right.
And we'll have that up on the website as
Absolutely
well.
Absolutely, we will.
Yeah, so, yeah, and, you know, Jonathan, I really appreciate you being here. We have about a minute left, but we have, you know, this is like, you know, personal point of privilege.
Here we go.
No, you actually led the, or part of the excavation, the archaeology, did the archaeology work for where the Ronstadt Transit Center is now, and which used to be the location of our great-grandfather's hardware store, Ronstadt's Hardware. And we were talking during the break of all the little knickknacks that sort of were found there, and to give us a sense of, you know, that's more, you know, contemporary history, but a lot of fun.
Yes, in 1990, when the city planned to build the new transit center there, they called in the archaeologists to see what was there before they did their construction, and I was the archaeologist leading that project, and we excavated an entire city block and found house foundations that went back to just before the turn of the 19th century and just after, so the late 1800s and early 1900s. And what we saw, what we found included not only house foundations and privy pits just full of artifacts, but we found unusual objects like in a privy pit, a Colt revolver. Now, you just have to imagine the backstory of that.
Cowboy goes in to do his business. Bloop. Hey,
buddy, and his cowboy friend said, "Well, I'll hold your ankles."
No thanks. I'll get another one. That's awesome. Well, listen, thanks a bunch for being on the show. We really, really appreciate everything you do. You're one of the guys that makes Tucson a great place to live. And, you know, transplant from Kentucky, right?
Yes, originally from Lexington.
Yeah, came out here. Another reason why the University of Arizona is such a fabulous thing in our community, such a fabulous institution, because the U of A brought you out here, and look at all the great things that you're helping the community do.
Well,
so
thanks.
So we appreciate that. So, Tucson, have a great week. Enjoy that warm weather.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next week in June here on the Fred and Jeff Show. Take care.
Rodeados de mil recuerdos.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The question of health risks from cell phone use.